Welcome to Living with Dying, a podcast where we're going to talk about the unspeakable, everything to do with death and dying, and how to live with it. We're all on the same journey towards the end, but we just never talk about it. We don't like to think of our own life ending, and we certainly don't like to contemplate losing our nearest and dearest. So we all join in this huge conspiracy, pretending it won't happen to us. And then, when it does, we're often ill-prepared. So we're saying, let's talk about death. Let's open up the subject, and by listening to other people's stories, glean some advice and tips on how best to approach death, how to deal with loss, and how to rebuild a life after. So I'm talking today to Michael Kahn, who's a long-standing friend of mine. I think we've known each other 17 or 18 years, Michael.
I think so, something like that, yeah, long time.
And during that time, I know I've met your parents and I've met your husband's parents. I've met one or two members of your family. I think I probably met your sister once.
I'm sure. I think probably when one of the visits to France, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think she features very strongly in your life or hasn't featured very.
Hadn't before she passed away for a long time. And when we were younger, she did. And we were friendly and had a normal sibling relationship. But then, yeah, later in life, for various reasons we'll probably go into, we hadn't spoken for probably almost 10 years before she died.
As long as that?
Yeah.
So let's go back to the beginning then. What was your childhood relationship like?
I grew up in the States. You could probably tell from the accent still hangs around, even though I've lived out of the States now more than in. In suburbia, my dad went to work every day. My mom was a housewife, they called it then. I don't know if it's politically correct, but yeah. We had a very sort of upper middle class life with a nice big garden, a nice big house, and every advantage you could really want, both of us. Both went to very good schools, all the rest. And so, yeah, we got on well. She was 4 years older than I am. And so she was always sort of one school ahead of me. So we never actually in school at the same time. So we had different friends and all that kind of thing. But yeah, we got on. I wouldn't say we were best friends, but we got on.
Did you share a lot of interest in common? Did you do things together?
Oh gosh, I would probably say no. I think that makes us sound probably closer than we were. So she had her life, I had my life. We would have family lunches, family dinners, that sort of thing. But apart from that, no, we didn't ever see each other kind of socially or do anything together really apart from family stuff.
But you would get together as a family with your parents.
Yeah, we did. It was important to my parents. We would have like family meals at the weekend. I would say probably every Sunday night, certainly. We all ate together, the four of us. It was just the two of us. We were the only two kids, so the four of us would eat together on a Sunday night. My dad worked very long hours, so quite often, especially when we were very young, we'd be asleep by the time he got home. So the weekends were like, yeah, definitely family time for all of us, yeah.
And then you obviously moved away from the States.
I did. So I took a year abroad to study in London when I was at university and loved it. And I came back after having graduated university, not intending to live my entire life in England. But yeah, that was now 32 years ago. So I ended up staying. You know how life is. One thing led to another. I met friends, got a partner and got a good job and ended up just staying. So yeah, so I left there in 91. Yeah.
So that would inevitably have separated you and you, I guess you grew apart then, did you?
Well, no, not straight away. So at that time, like she would come and visit me. She had a succession of, that makes it sound terrible, a succession of partners. And she would come and visit us. We had American Thanksgiving all together in London. At the beginning, it was still okay. And then I spent a lot of time in the States because all my family was there. So for Christmas and that, we would go back to the States. So really, it was in that, these kind of last 10 years only that things got estranged. And I mean, we could talk about, it's not a secret, we could talk about that. But now she did when she was a teenager, had a drug problem. And she overcame it. And I was amazingly proud of her for doing that. She became like a real Narcotics Anonymous spokesperson and guru. And she sponsored people and she had all the medals and she was amazing. But 10 years before she died, so whenever that was 10 years ago, she had a relapse, which is really heartbreaking because she had been doing so well and got married and had a child and had a beautiful house. And I think she legitimately injured herself and legitimately had some pain and ended up taking painkillers. And it just got the better of her again. It's so heartbreaking. It's such a tragic story. And because I tried to sort of intervene and say, you're back on drugs and we need to do something, you know, like sometimes drug abusers do, she got very defensive and said she wasn't, but she was, we all knew she was. And so that's really what led us to stop talking after a lot of fighting. First, there was a lot of fighting and everyone said some very unkind things. And then it just sort of stopped. And so, yeah, then we just had no contact at all. But my mom was still in contact with her. So really, really difficult because my mom was caught in the middle between us, desperate for us to reconcile. But we just never did, which is probably the hardest part. You know, coming back to the main topic of it is, you always, while she was alive, you always think there's maybe a chance that like somehow this is going to come good and somehow we're going to reconcile and somehow she's going to get better and say, I'm so sorry. And you were right all along. And, you know, that's the fantasy, isn't it? And yeah, we never met there before she died.
So tell me about her dying. How did you hear about it? How did it happen?
So we don't really know to this day, and I think this is quite common, whether it was intentional or not intentional, but she did die of a drug overdose. She was on OxyContin, which is strong painkillers, yeah. At the end, her husband, for lack of a better word, of her partner, they were sort of, they were married, but they got married by like, you know, as a spiritual person on the beach. It wasn't a legal wedding, but she was married for all intents and purposes. Anyway, he had called my mom and said, she won't wake up, you know, like you see in a film. And then my mom was devastated and called me hysterical and said, you know, your sister's gone. And I think for a while, for the first maybe 10 minutes, I didn't quite believe it because I thought, oh, here she goes again. Because sometimes with the drug abusers, there's a lot of drama. There was a lot of drama about her. She crashed cars and she got arrested for things. And there was just one thing after another. So when I got the call that she had died, I almost felt kind of skeptical at first. I thought, here's another one of her stories, you know. But then, yeah, it turned out to be real. And, you know, it was shocking because, yeah, she was at the time, I'm 53, so she was, maybe like 57. So young, that's young now. Now that I'm 53, 57 seems young. And I was just really shocked. And of course, felt bad for my mom. Now, I have to say too, that my mom and sister didn't have the most amazing relationship because she was a drug abuser and she wasn't always the most pleasant person. So they were a little bit estranged, but my mom refused to like give up on her, I suppose you could say. And they had some relationship, but my mom hadn't seen her in 4 years before she died. So they spoke, but they hadn't seen each other. So that I got the call and I was there with my partner, Mark. And I said, my sister is gone. And he was as shocked as I was. And my first thought really was just for my mom and for my dad, because you know, losing a child is just, I mean, I can't imagine. I don't have children, but people say that's like the worst possible thing that could happen to you in life. So I guess more than anything, I was worried for them than for me, because obviously it's sad to lose my sister, but I hadn't spoken to her in 10 years. The contact we had leading up to that was deeply unpleasant. So, I was more worried, I guess, about my parents than me.
So what did you do? Did you jump on a plane?
Well, I offered to jump on a plane, but my mom was like, there's no point and there's not going to be a funeral. I think by this point, my sister had alienated so many people that she had her partner and she had her daughter. And that was kind of it. She didn't have that many people in her life. So my parents jumped on a plane and they went to see her, but they cremated her and they didn't really have a funeral as such. They had just the cremation, a little service. And it was just those four people stood there and that was it. So I did offer to come and they said, it's all happened so quickly that they said, by the time you get here, it's going to be sort of done. And then a few months later, maybe like 6 months later, they did have like a little memorial service for her. Some of her older friends, childhood friends, arranged it. And that was a tricky one because I thought, should I go to that? And like out of respect almost for them and for her. And we did have a relationship earlier. And then I thought, I don't know, we hadn't spoken in so long and we were on such bad terms. I felt a bit strange going. I felt like maybe either people wouldn't want me there because they'd say, like, you're the bad guy. You know, she hated you, basically, I mean, to be fair. But also, I felt a bit sort of ghoulish, you know, sort of hanging around where everyone's going to be crying and really upset. And I didn't feel that upset. So I thought it felt a bit weirdish to be, in the shadows of this ceremony when I wasn't feeling the same thing everyone else did. So they did it on Zoom because this is post-pandemic. So everything now, of course, is available on Zoom. I did attend that and I listened to it. I went in sort of anonymously, so I didn't want to cause any problems and distract from the day. And yeah, it was a strange one because, obviously with the memorial, it was very, very positive and very glowing. And like a lot of it didn't ring true to me, but if that was people's experience, I'm so grateful that they experienced that and that they had a good relationship with her. I was sorry that I didn't. I was sorry it didn't ring true for me, but it didn't. But yeah, I was glad I went and listened to it. But yeah, a lot of it didn't resonate, I guess.
So it sounds like you had a sort of you had to be true to, you felt you wanted to be true to yourself more than anything.
I think so. I think, yeah, we almost felt, yeah, a bit hypocritical to go and to like pretend to be sad. And when people were genuinely sad, I thought, yeah, that just didn't feel right. It didn't feel right to go and go through the motions where, like I said, out of respect to the people who were genuinely upset and who were attending, I thought it doesn't feel right to go. And to also just to be a distraction, because people knew that we hadn't spoken. She had said some very, very unkind things about me, I'm sure, to lots of people. So to then turf up, I just felt like it was going to be a little bit of a circus. And maybe someone would say, what are you doing here, kind of thing. And that's the last thing I wanted, for me to be the center of attention at her memorial. So yeah, I took it just a step back. And I was there for my parents to support them. And although it's horrible to lose a child, I think the fact that they hadn't seen her for so long, I think the fact that they had a very strained relationship with her, in some ways, maybe that made it easier for them. I don't know. You'd have to ask them. But I felt like their mourning wasn't like what you'd expect either. Like they went to this memorial, and then they came home the next day, and then they never ever really have said her name, I don't think, since. They just never mentioned her. It's like she never existed, which I think is strange.
So this is a very unusual example of grief, isn't it? It's quite different from most people that I'm talking to, and I guess most people altogether.
It is. It absolutely is. And you almost feel a little bit embarrassed because you feel like you should be just like sobbing and so upset. And that's what people expect. And when news got out, there's Facebook, social media, news got out that she had died. Like people from ages ago, when I was a child, to friends from university, to everyone started contacting me and saying, I'm so, so sorry. And at first I was like, well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's not been easy. You say the things people expect you to say. And at a certain point, it just got a bit overwhelming because I wasn't feeling what they wanted me to feel and what they expected me to feel. And you almost feel a little bit embarrassed, like you're a monster, that you don't have these feelings that people are expecting. So that part was quite hard. And then close friends, I was able to be honest with. And I was like, it's not maybe the tragedy that people think it is for me. For other people, absolutely, but for me, no. So yeah, really, really strange one. And I heard someone else describe it, and so I'm going to steal this from them because I didn't make this up. They said when they were estranged from someone who had died, and they said it wasn't a relief when their sibling died, but it was a release. And I thought that was really interesting distinction, because I think for me, exactly the same. It wasn't a relief because I had no contact with her, but while she was alive, and while she was talking to my mom, and she was connected to people I knew, she was sort of just like moving around, in the background a little bit. And you didn't know when we were going to start fighting again, or whether she was going to have, some drama in her life again that I get pulled into. So when she finally did die, it was like, it's over. Like there's this sense of, okay, it's really now over. And not so much, as I say, a relief as just a release. It was just the ending of something that was clear cut. But yeah, as you say, a very weird, unexpected reaction to losing a sibling. I think most people, and I've had friends who've been just devastated. The other thing to say, I guess, is that I think I mourned her loss so much earlier, because when she went back on drugs and she was getting in trouble and she was just so unkind, it was just a totally different person. And I think at that point, maybe, I think that's when my heart was broken and I thought, I've lost my sister. I think it was then. So I think when she physically went 10 years later, I think I had done my mourning. I think the person who died that day was like, yeah, just someone I didn't even recognize, to be honest.
So it sounds like a long goodbye, really. You realized ages ago that it was bound to happen.
It was. But what's so weird about that is that like there's always that little spark of hope, isn't there, that you think it's going to come good. And when I reached out to her daughter and to her partner when she died, I said, I'm really so sad. And this part was true, because I always said, I always thought we'd find a way back to each other. And I thought, I put it in a text without thinking, and I thought, yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I thought that's a really good way of putting it. I thought somehow, some way, and I didn't know how exactly, if someone was going to apologize or not apologize, I don't really care, but I thought somehow it would have a happy ending. And then so in those years where she was back on drugs, we weren't speaking, there was that like glimmer of a possible reconciliation. And then when she really dies, then knowing that that's just been extinguished, yeah, that was sad. That was sad. And I think just the opportunity that's lost of, she was a really bright girl, she was beautiful, she was very personable, you know, before the drugs. So I felt like there was so much potential there. And that's another sad part of it that made me feel sad, was that lost potential. But those are all slightly impersonal things compared to what most people probably feel. So there was sadness there, but not the sadness you'd expect, probably.
So would you say it's left you with any regrets, or have you dealt with all that?
I think I've dealt with it. It's a good question. I think I have, because I never closed the door. So I was always open. It's really funny because, you know, Facebook and social media, when we were really fighting, we weren't getting on, I was going to unfriend her from Facebook, as you do, as people do. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that, because first of all, it's really petty. But I said, second of all, when we do make up and then reconcile and you have to like re-add her back to Facebook, it's going to feel so awkward. And I thought, just leave all that alone. So I never blocked her calls. I never unfriended her from Facebook. I never did anything. I was always really, really open for her to like get better and to come back to me and sort of meet me in the middle. And so I think because of that, and she just never was able to do it. So it's more of like a feeling of, I'm disappointed. Sounds such a mild description, but I'm more disappointed than anything else. So regrets, I don't think I do, because she was just in such a crazy space in her own head. And like I said, so unkind and so unpleasant and so vindictive that, yeah, I wouldn't, if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't do anything differently, because there was just no dealing with her.
It sounds like she wasn't someone you were going to miss.
Exactly right. And I don't. But like I said, you feel awkward saying that. It makes you sound like such a terrible person. But I don't miss her. I mean, I don't. She was not very nice. And even though we had the history of a childhood together, and I do have happy memories of her, you know, for years, but I don't miss her, because my lasting memory of her is just this, yeah, not a very nice person.
I feel it's very good of you to open up like this about her and your relationship, because I'm not sure everybody would.
I think you're probably right. And like I say, it does make you feel a little strange and a little bit like a monster. But part of the reason I'm happy to and wanted to is because I'm sure that other people probably feel the same. And I think that other people are feeling like, I'm a psycho. You know, my brother died, my sister died, my mother, my father, whoever. And I'm not feeling that sad. And is there something wrong with me? Am I psychotic? And so, yeah, I wanted to say, yeah, you're definitely not alone. I feel the same. And it does make me feel a little bit guilty that I don't feel worse, if that makes sense. But I don't. And I just have to be honest. So, yeah, but it's strange. It's a strange feeling.
And how is your relationship now with both your parents and with her partner and her daughter?
Well, with my parents, it's a strange one, because it did definitely put a strain, all of this, on my relationship with my mom, because, like I said, she was very much caught in the middle. And when my sister was being really horrible and just awful to me and leaving messages and threats and just absolutely awful, my mom, and maybe like, I guess maybe other moms, I don't know, felt like she didn't want to take sides. And I felt like one person here is right and good, and one person here is awful and bad. And like, this is the time to take sides. And she didn't and wouldn't. And all she wanted to do was have us reconcile, and would pressure me and bully me and beg me and anything she could do, bribe me to reconcile. And I guess I have a little bit of integrity, because I just would not reconcile with someone who's just not treating me nice. I don't know. I had no desire to reconcile with this monster. So yeah, that put a big strain on my relationship with my mom. My dad was very much sort of on my side. My dad at one point said, this is when she was alive, he said, if I never see her or speak to her again, it'll be a happy day for me. And it's his daughter. That gives you an idea that it's not just me. She was nuts. So yeah, he was much more on my side. But then I think for a quiet life, I don't want to say like a lot of men do, but maybe like some men do, he sort of went along with my mom, and it was his daughter. So that wasn't great. It's okay now, but it's nothing like it was. I was really close with my mom before all of this happened, and it's not the same as it was. I think this whole thing sort of slightly tarnished our relationship, but we make the best of it. She's getting older, and I don't know how long, you know, how often my parents, so we try to be, you know, really, we see, visit each other, try to be civil and nice with each other, but it's different. With her daughter, well, this is an interesting one, because I'm sure that in these years, her daughter now is 23, and so in these years was from 13 to 23, so I'm sure her daughter got an earful about what a monster I was and how awful I was, and I turned her into the police, and I accused her of being a drug addict, and so I had a few choice texts from the daughter as well, which is really horrible, because she was a child and thrown in the middle of this, never should have been exposed to any of this, and I was so committed to never, ever say a single bad word to this child about her mother. And if she ever asked, I would say, your mother loves you, and she was the happiest day of her life was the day you were born, and I went down that route and left it at that. So make a long story short, yeah, we are civil, but I think she probably despises me if she was honest. I think she knows a lot of untruths, I've been told that from my sister. But we, you know, happy Christmas and happy birthday, and we're sort of at that. And like with my sister, the door is open. If she ever called me and needed something or was upset, like, I would take the call, I would get on a plane, I would do whatever. I have no beef with her, but I feel like it's coming from her side. I think she probably heard a lot of unkind things about me, and you believe them when you're a child and it's your mother. So that's not great. The partner, her husband, he's actually a really nice guy. But part of what brought this all to a head was that she just was off her mind on drugs, and she'd been taking these really strong painkillers, and she ended up having a big, big fight with this partner. And she hit him in the head with a concrete sort of slab. And he was bleeding, and we ended up calling the police. And then the police came, and that's what precipitated, you know, social workers getting involved and child services. So I think because he knows really that I did have her best interests at heart. And, you know, I joke sometimes, my vision in calling the police on my sister was that they were going to, like, take care of her, put her in some kind of rehab. I thought, I'm going to visit her in this rehab. She's going to be propped up on pillows and say, thank you so much, you've saved my life. That's what I thought getting the police involved would do. I thought, this is my way to save her and to fix the situation. And I think he, maybe out of everyone, her partner, her partner before she died, knew that and understood that. So he doesn't seem to have a big problem with me. I don't have a big problem with him. He's missing her terribly. I think he genuinely did love her. He's also a recovering drug addict. So I think he understood it from both sides, that she fell victim to it again, which is just, it's so hard for me to understand as someone who's never done any kind of drugs at all, how addictive and how destructive it is, except for seeing it sort of, you know, through her eyes now. Just how awful it is.
Knowing you as well as I do, Michael, I know that you, in the early days of her first drug abuse, you couldn't have just stood back and let her get on with it. I know you'd have tried to help her, because that's the kind of person you are, isn't it? So I guess you put a lot of effort in over the years.
I did. It sort of happened sort of suddenly, though, as well, if I'm honest. Like I said, she was fine for years and years and years. We had a decent relationship. She injured herself kayaking, of all things. They were kayaking. She had pulled a muscle, or I don't know, had a hernia, I'm not really sure, and started taking painkillers. And so it was like a really rapid switch. So the period where she was acting sort of strange, but I didn't know it was drugs. There was that period of like, it's definitely something wrong with her, but I didn't know if it was a mental health issue or didn't know what it was. I think in that time, yeah, I was very understanding and very kind. And I spoke to her for like over an hour on the phone. But I was thinking, a lot of what you're saying doesn't make sense. And I knew she wasn't making sense. But at that time, the last thing on my mind was drugs, because you have to understand, she was like the biggest anti-drug champion in the world. She went to conferences, you know, all around the world speaking about the dangers of drugs. So when she was acting strange, yeah, it didn't occur to me. I mean, so I was very nice to her. And it wasn't until it sort of the penny dropped with this assault is really what, that's where it all came to a head. And I was like, definitely, you know, that you are taking drugs. There's no doubt in my mind. And then she said, no, I'm not. And how dare you? And that's where everything fell apart. She just wouldn't admit it. So, yeah, sad.
So she was a casualty of OxyContin. really, one of the many, many thousands.
Absolutely. And I think it's because it had been so long since she, because she was addicted to heroin originally. That was her drug of choice. And I think it had been decades, you know, since she had taken any drugs. So I think she got maybe slightly overconfident because she knew really she shouldn't take OxyContin as an ex-heroin addict. You know, you once you're done, you're done. You can't dabble with things like that. And I think maybe she got a bit cocky and she thought, I could have one, I could have three, I could have eight. And then it just, like millions and millions of people now, it just absolutely spiraled.
Was it that well known then? Or could she have just thought she was taking something like a strong painkiller?
I think it was pretty well known already then. And anyway, she shouldn't have been having any narcotics at all. And I think, I might be wrong, but I think it's a narcotic. So I think, yeah, she should have. I mean, but then the question is, what do you do if you're in excruciating pain? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I guess get someone to monitor you and help you, and maybe you can have one, but then take the rest away. And maybe the partner wasn't strong enough to do that because she was quite a strong and fiery personality. You didn't want to tell her no. So yeah, I don't know. But I think it was reasonably well known. I think she should have known better. I think she probably felt confident that she had a handle on it. Like I said, after the better part of 30 years or something not doing drugs. Yeah, and then it just sucked her in. It's horrible.
It's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's very kind of you to talk about it because I guess it's not easy.
Yeah, it's not. Like I said, I feel just disappointed. I feel the fact that like there's no chance now to reconcile. And I guess for anyone else who loses someone they hadn't been speaking to, they've been estranged from, that's always the bit, isn't it? You think, okay, now we're never going to get the happy ending. We're never going to have that hug and that reconciliation. So that part, yeah, that stings and I'm sad about that. But when you said about regrets, I feel like I just don't know what I could have done differently to get that happy ending. I was there, I was open, I was kind, and she just wasn't in the right place to meet me halfway. So yeah, really, really sad and disappointed. But yeah, as awful as it sounds, no regrets really.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that with me, Michael.
No problem. I hope it's useful. I hope someone else in the same situation, I hope it resonates with them.
Thank you. We'll be having more chats in future episodes about everything to do with death and dying, such as how to prepare for it, what it's really like when someone dies, how to talk about it, what kind of plans to make, how different cultures and faiths approach dying and bereavement, lots more around grief and loss, how to support others in their sadness, and my personal hobby horse, how to rebuild a life, a good life, after the loss of someone special. If you'd like to join us to talk about the death of someone near to you, if this episode has resonated with you and you have a story to share, or if you've been affected by some of the issues raised, please do get in touch at hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.